This is The Irrationally Exuberant. I'm Reed Messerschmidt.
Hello, friends. Quick note about this episode. I did a run of this show years ago before I knew what I was doing. I theoretically do now. And this is one of the episodes from that run. I like it. I think it's pretty good. And I thought it would be fun to release it as is. So hopefully it's not too terrible. I think, the sound quality is probably slightly worse, but I think it's pretty good. So enjoy, and thanks. You look really nice today.
Episode 6, Klaus Nomi. Part 1, Biography.
Listen, I'm well aware that the last thing the world needs is another biography of Klaus Nomi. He's already a household name on par with James Polk, young John Cusack, and the Andrews sisters. What could I, a humble podcast magnate, possibly add to the reams upon reams of information already available to you via your home library, public library, magazine subscriptions, nightly newscasts, corner newsstand, and pocket supercomputer? Everywhere one looks, his angular, alien features, slathered in pancake makeup and cartoonish brow, accented by plastic three-pronged hair, are emblazoned upon baseball caps, top hats, halter tops, hoodies, and business casual velveteen capes. It's tattooed to the ankles of desperate baristas, crudely scotch-taped to the bedroom walls and locker rooms of lovesick teenagers. Cover bands with names like No Means No Me and Klaus Kahl Bogart stage time at VFW posts in every American town, regardless of size or political and economic comportment. His ghostly countertenor fills sporting stadiums, dank bars, dusk-tinged city streets, massage parlors, opium dens, and Subarus. His songs soundtrack what sometimes feels like every third movie preview and Ginger Snap commercial. Enough is enough, you may be shouting. Yes, he is a gift, a jewel in humanity's crown, recognized and beloved by all. But have we not reached the point of saturation? The man has been dead for 110. Perhaps it's time we move on. We will, in time, dear listener. I'm sure of it. After this recording, perhaps. Klaus Nomi, as you know, was a pop singer, of sorts. Born Klaus Berber in Bavaria in 1944, he was a quiet, effeminate boy, raised by a single mother, the result of a fling in a Normandy hotel with Stan Laurel after a USO show. Laurel passed in 1956 without any knowledge of young Klaus, but the resemblance is striking. Post-war Bavaria was a surprisingly nurturing environment for a kid whose primary interests were Elvis, opera, and other boys, as it was establishing itself as a more liberal, democratic society in the mode of pre-World War I Germany, which had long been refreshingly queer-friendly. His neighbors thought nothing of seeing young Klaus roaming the streets in full Victorian fancy lad regalia, complete with shiny leather boots, pastel yellow satin socks, baby blue velvet short pants with a matching wide-collared jacket cuffed with lace over a flowing, puffy white shirt, an exaggerated polka-dotted bow tie around his neck, and a mop of silky, androgynous blonde hair, topped by a sailor's cap, holding a giant lollipop, and greeting all who passed with a curtsy and a stern, Germanic smile. It was a wonderful time and place to be a child. By 17, he was spending most of his time in West Berlin, which had become a mecca for young German liberals, and took a job as an usher at the Deutsche Oper, where he sang arias for his co-workers and the maintenance crew, and, at night, performed at Kleist Casino, a gay disco. This is all the information we have about Nomi's early life. It's not particularly interesting, so let me start again with the story that he liked to tell. In 1972, Klaus Nomi descended from space and alit upon the streets of New York City. 10 years later, he gave us this.
Listen to me, baby, you got to understand. You're old enough to learn the makings of a man. Listen to me, baby, it's time to settle down. Am I asking too much for you to stick around? Every boy wants a girl he can trust to the very end. Maybe that's you, won't you stay? But till then, when I see lips begging to be kissed, I can't stop.
Stop!
I can't stop myself.
No!
Has taken over my one track mind. Believe it or not, you're in my heart all the time. All the girls are saying that you'll end up a fool. For the time being, maybe live by my rules. When I settle down, I want one baby on my mind. Forgive and forget, and I'll make up for all lost time. If she's put together fine, then she's on my mind. I can't stop. I can't stop myself.
Strike again. Strike again.
There's a chapel in the pines waiting for us around the bend. Picture in your mind.
In reality, Klaus stowed away on a luxury liner, leaving Rostock and bound for New York City to pursue his destiny, brief and unprecedented fame and fortune. He was discovered on board in the mid-Atlantic, who was first thought to be a ghost. When it was found that he was in fact a living human, he charmed the bourgeois passengers with delicate arias and seduced a large percentage of the crew. He arrived in America already something of a star, if only to the massive boat's occupants, but still had to find his way on the garbage-littered, crime-riddled streets of 1970s New York City, until his big break inevitably came. He took vocal lessons and got a job as a pastry chef at Flower Power, a small erotic bakery in the East Village, which, by all accounts, he was great at. His most popular creations were brownies, decorated with incredibly lifelike black and white depictions of silent film stars like Theda Bara and Buster Keaton performing cunnilingus on various members of the Yankees on the set of the $10,000 pyramid. Sadly, no photographic evidence of these confections exist, though Lou Reed once called them, quote, the sexiest brownies I've ever eaten. Inevitably, as a striking, fashion-forward gay German emigre, with odd tastes living in New York in the 1970s, he fell into the punk scene, which quickly evolved into more of a new wave thing. He began performing camp versions of Wagner, which led to an invite to perform at New Wave Vaudeville, a show mostly made up of weird theater kids amusing each other with Dada routines. When Klaus took the stage, though, things got serious when Nomi appeared fully formed. The MC announced that what the crowd was about to hear was not a recording, and the room went black. Klaus, who had just that morning chosen the stage name Nomi, an anagram of Omni, an acknowledgement of otherness, and a plea for acceptance all rolled into one, entered, rigid and unblinking. Gloved hands held daintily up and out, and was hit by the spotlight. Shiny, patent leather clung to his diminutive frame, and a crinkled, clear plastic sci-fi villain cape was draped over his shoulders. His huge forehead and receding hairline were accented by hair jelly-drenched, slicked-back hair molded into 3 points at the top. His face was deathly white, eyes thick with eyeliner, lips done black, shaped small and angular. His backing track queued up, and he began to sing in his signature falsetto, what would soon become the most recognizable voice since the world fell in love with the smooth, southern drawl of Foghorn Leghorn. At first, many in the crowd laughed, but all were soon rapt. When he finished, a strobe light began to flash, and smoke filled the room. Nomi disappeared. The crowd was silent. Not a few tears were shed, and an epidemic of goose pimples had broken out. And then they all broke out into rapturous applause. A star was born. We may as well go to a montage. Nomi, after the show, walks off stage and is immediately met by a man in a sharp suit, skinny tie, and sunglasses, accompanied by David Bowie. Mr. Nomi, my name is Clive Davis, president of Sony Music. This is David Bowie. You've got the goods, kid. How'd you like to be a millionaire? Cut to 5 teenage girls screaming and dancing around a suburban living room as Nomi, in a black spandex bodysuit and ankle-length skirt, sings backup for Bowie on Saturday Night Live. Cut to Nomi in a recording studio, wearing a latex burka and clown shoes. The producer and engineer high-five as they wrap up recording of the Nomi song. Cut to Nomi's self-titled debut album, climbing up the charts until it lands firmly at number one. Cut to Nomi in his signature huge plastic triangle tuxedo, marching down a red carpet surrounded by fawning, shirtless boys. Cameras flash and photographers shout his name. He pauses for a quick photo op with Dee Dee Ramone. Star swipe. Nomi on stage at a sold-out Madison Square Garden. Fans scream, press forward, faint, as his backup dancers line up behind him to do the thing where it looks like he has many arms, and he breaks into his number one hit song, Lightning Strikes. Cut to Nomi on the couch at the Late Show, dressed in what appears to be a massive plastic orange, relaying an anecdote about a night out with Dennis Wilson, Richard Hell, Irma Bombeck, and Henry Kissinger to a delighted Johnny Carson. Cut to Nomi in a black and white NASA spacesuit at the Grammys, ecstatic as his name is announced for Best New Artist, Song of the Year, and Album of the Year, presented by Alabama, Patti LaBelle, and Orson Welles, respectively. Cut to Nomi wearing a tracksuit made of porcupine quills, driving down Hollywood Boulevard in a red Corvette convertible, pointy hair impervious to the wind. John Travolta, riding shotgun, grinning, snaps a popper and holds it up to Klaus's nose. He inhales, shivers, and puts the pedal to the metal. Cut to Nomi and Travolta making love on a pile of money. He finishes and they roll onto their backs, sweaty and panting. Nomi peels a $100 bill off of the side of Travolta's face and they laugh and laugh and laugh. Fade to black. Nomi was the biggest star in the world, but as these stories often go, tragedy struck. He and his band were touring Japan where, unsurprisingly, he was a huge hit, even bigger than in America. In fact, for 2 years, the Nomi suit was the most purchased article of clothing in the country. Everything was going beautifully until he began to take ill, becoming dizzy, losing weight, and constantly fatigued. The tour marched on, but he couldn't shake whatever he had. And in January of 1983, he collapsed while performing a triumphant homecoming show atop the Berlin Wall. He toppled to the ground and was luckily caught by his adoring fans who, in a breathtaking display of German efficiency, carried him, as a group, to the nearest hospital. He was studied for weeks, but the doctors couldn't come to any definitive conclusions, and he returned to New York, where he was scheduled to record his much-anticipated second album. The process was slow, as Nomi's voice kept giving out. He was getting sores all over his body, and was admitted to the hospital several more times. The album, Simple Man, was completed and, despite selling millions of copies and reaching number one, was something of a disappointment. It's great, no doubt, and arguably more fun than its predecessor, but it lacked the spark of genius that his first album had in spades. Another tour was planned, but he didn't have it in him. After months of medical attention, the doctors determined that he had the mysterious illness that was gaining traction in New York at the time. What was then known, horrifically, as gay cancer. It was AIDS. At the time, little was known about the disease, including how it spread. Since no one was sure how you got it, they were terrified of any contact with those that were already infected. Travolta, in particular, was scared right into the closet. His friends and millions upon millions of adoring fans could only look on as Klaus Nomi wasted away. In June of 1983, he performed for the last time in Munich, close to his hometown, wearing a Baroque operatic suit with a full ruffled collar to hide the sores on his neck. He was emaciated and was unable to reach some of the notes he was capable of only a few months prior. but it's one of the most moving performances in recorded history. He sings Cold Genius from the 1691 Puccelli opera, King Arthur, and the lyrics could not be more apt. Listen. Three months later, Klaus Nomi died alone in the hospital, the first well-known person to succumb to AIDS. The world mourned. What can only be described as existential riots broke out across the United States. The destruction and looting directed at whatever vague something had taken the rioters' hero. 8 of the top 10 songs on the Billboard charts were by Nomi. The other 2 were reworked versions of Candle in the Wind and American Pie by Elton John and Don McLean, respectively. Pope John Paul II reportedly considered disbanding the Catholic Church, unable to tolerate a God that would do such a thing to such a faultless being. Humanity has never fully recovered, but Klaus Nomi's legacy lives on. Simple Man, despite its problems, swept that year's Grammys, which allotted a full 45 minutes for a Nomi tribute featuring Bowie, Diana Ross, Michael and Tito Jackson, Lou Reed, Don Henley, Herbie Hancock, Debbie Harry, Bruce Springsteen, Suicide, and Ringo Starr. In 1996, a biopic, Nomi, starring Crispin Glover, was released to massive success and acclaim, and became the first 3D film to win an Oscar for Best Picture. A remake with Jared Leto is reportedly in the works. The Nomi influence can be seen and heard everywhere. His pioneering video work paved the way for MTV. One can only imagine how huge he would have been had he lived to its heyday. Without his signature style and sound, a potent combination of Kraftwerk, Roy Orbison, Bowie, Maria Callas, Tiny Tim, Marcel Marceau, and C-3PO, we wouldn't have Morrissey or Lady Gaga or iPhones or Barack Obama. Our dance halls and supermarkets wouldn't be filled with the gorgeous sounds of synth opera. Gay and balding men would still be relegated to the shadows, and plastic tuxedos would never have become a staple of everyday office attire. Chances are, we would have entered some type of anti-intellectual dark age, where cat videos were our only solace from a never-ending parade of greed, corruption, injustice, racism, sexism, homophobia, and murder. It would be a goddamn nightmare. We'll be back after a message from our sponsor.
Pardon me, mother. I require sustenance. Well, son, how are you feeling? Forlorn, mother. I miss father. Here, have a bowl of Nomi's. He would have wanted you to eat your feelings. Thank you, Mother. How are they, son? Quite adequate, Mother. Your kindness is appreciated.
When your son needs a snack,
no bees!
Because his soul is black,
no bees!
And his father's never coming back,
no bees!
Nomies, a no-nonsense German artisan breakfast cereal from the makers of Shishka Bauhaus and Morrissey Grapes. Get them at a quality grocer near you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, Klaus Nomi. Part 2. Dear Nomi.
Dear Nomi, I'm a 42-year-old mother of four beautiful children, ages 6 to 16, with a loving husband who is also a great father. We've been together for 20 years, and I treasure every moment of the time we've had and the wonderful life we've built. My problem is I think he might be a tortoise. He's constantly masticating vegetation, moves very slowly, and retreats into his shell when we argue. The other night, he fell out of bed onto his back and was stuck that way until morning, when I finally noticed and flipped him over onto his legs. Last week, in a moment of weakness, I figured out the password to his laptop. It was Secret Turtle 71. I discovered that he's been spending a lot of time looking at photos of the Galapagos Islands. I wouldn't be so upset to find out that he was, in fact, a terrestrial reptile. It certainly wouldn't be a deal-breaker, so to speak. But the thought that he's possibly been lying to me for all of these years is difficult to stomach. I'm also worried that, if he is a tortoise, he's dissatisfied with our sex life. Klaus, I don't know what to do. Please help. Signed, Shellshocked.
Dear Shellshocked, I wish you'd have mentioned whether you yourself are a tortoise, or perhaps some other type of land-dwelling reptile. A snake, perhaps. I suspect that you are, based on your atrocious spelling and punctuation. If so, I don't see what the problem is. Simply ask him. You've been together for a very long time, and should be able to have frank conversations with one another. You said that if you found out he were a tortoise, it would not be a deal-breaker. So, if the answer is yes, the two of you should enter couples therapy to figure out how to move forward. I would suggest seeing a crocodile. they are quite wise. As for the sex, you have been with him for 20 years and have 4 children. You're obviously doing something right. If you need to spice things up, do what I do. Slip into a crotchless clown suit made entirely of rubber Deutschmarks and give him the surprise of a lifetime. The male tortoise has a substantial tail, so try incorporating that. This question is so weird.
Dear Nomi, long-time reader, first-time writer, I need your help settling an argument between my husband and me. He insists that the only appropriate way to dress for a job interview is standard business attire. I think that it could be beneficial to add a little flair, perhaps show some shell. We both read your column religiously, and will abide by whatever you think. There's a fancy dinner of leafy greens on the line, though, so I really hope you side with me. Signed, Anxious Applicant.
Dear Anxious Applicant, is this another question from a tortoise? I'm so confused, but I will answer your question. In this economic environment, employers see hundreds of applicants for any given position. You must do something to set yourself apart beyond having an impressive resume. Wear something memorable, but don't go overboard, and whatever you do, don't come off as trashy or desperate. I would recommend a red leather pantsuit with lots of zippers and a collar no smaller than 4.5 feet from tip to tip, paired with a tiny sailor hat and those light-up glasses everyone was wearing for New Year's Eve 1999. The ones shaped like the number 2000. It may be difficult to get them to stay on your turtle face, though, since you don't really have a nose. Enjoy your leafy greens.
Dear Nomi, I'm 16 years old and in big trouble. My mother just remarried a really awesome guy. I'm so happy that you finally found someone 10 years after my dad's death, and it's great to have a father figure in my life again. Here's the problem. He's got a son that's the same age as me, and I think I'm in love with him. I think he feels the same way. We kissed once, and it was amazing. But it just seems wrong. What should I do? Signed, Misstep. P.S. I'm a tortoise.
Dear Misstep, this is getting ridiculous. I didn't even know that turtles knew English. How are you typing with your weird turtle feet? Is this some kind of American joke? Or has evolution recently granted reptiles the ability to act as humans? I'm really freaking out. But I am bound by duty to answer your question, so answer your question I will. Your love is a forbidden one, but it is love nonetheless. So few in this life are lucky enough to find the one that they are truly meant to be with. Even turtles. Especially turtles. If it was meant to be, then it was meant to be. You're breaking no laws, and many people do many worse things all the time and live happy lives. Go to him. Tell him your feelings. If they are the feelings that he feels, you must embrace them. And each other. Your mother and stepfather and the entire world must learn to accept your borderline incestuous turtle love. That is all for today. I've got a lot of thinking to do, and I must speak with my pet tortoise, Sheld Silverstein, to find out what is going on. This is Nomi signing off for now.
I'm a simple man. I'm simple. I do the best.
just a simple thought. A little bit the worse for wear, like a thief who got caught. Oh, it's just a thing you bought. It's just another same white lie that everybody got taught.
Part 3. Klaus Nomi makes eggs. It's 2 p.m. on a Wednesday, and Klaus Nomi has just woken up on the couch. The first thing he sees is his bed, a shiny, scarlet hydraulic sensory deprivation tank that he hasn't been in months. It takes up about 40% of his apartment and is covered in dust. He was out cruising the Navy Pier last night and didn't get home until around 4 in the morning. He's groggy and a little sore. Naked and without makeup, his hair mussed and crusted with yesterday's gel, he looks like what he is. A very slight, balding man closing in on 40. Sallow-skinned and pale. Chest still slightly inverted, like a young boy, with increasingly numerous patches of thick black hair sprouting from the places he can't reach with a razor. He picks up a crumpled silver pearl lame robe from the floor and heads into the kitchen, the only other room in the house, aside from a small bathroom. He is thinking that he is hungry, that he should probably stop fucking strangers, that he needs a new apartment, that he's got a great idea for a song about space dinosaurs, that he needs a boyfriend, that he feels old, that he should return his aunt's phone call, that he needs a real bed, that he doesn't feel well, that he hasn't felt well in a while, that he should incorporate black lights into his show, that he should see a doctor. He is thinking all of this in German, of course. In the kitchen, spare and dirty, with dishes piled in the sink, he opens the refrigerator. Pickles, mustard, old Chinese and hoisin-smeared takeout boxes, a carton of eggs. He grabs the eggs and looks inside. There are four. He smells them, not sure what odor would cause him to throw them out. All he gets is cold and cardboard. He proceeds. He is thinking that eating eggs alone is the saddest thing he can imagine. He is thinking that a song about space dinosaurs is stupid, but it could work. He gets a bowl from the cupboard, the last clean one, and begins to sing quietly. Ponchielli's Suicidio, his signature countertenor, tempt down to a broken whisper. He cracks the eggs and thinks that he should emerge from a giant egg in his show. He gets lost in that thought for a while, and his voice rises as he whisks the eggs. He looks up and sees the pieces of his plastic tuxedo stacked in the corner. It has lost some of its initial shine. There are scuffs around the arms and a crack in the jacket's tail. He sees his tiny, secondhand table, makeup piled high on its formica top. There's no room for him to sit to eat. He'll have to shove these goddamn plain eggs in his mouth while standing, alone in the middle of his shitty kitchen. He says aloud, flatly, "What the fuck am I doing?" The end.
And I felt so hard, hard in love with you. Oh, oh, I found out how good it feels to have your love. Oh, oh, say you will be mine. I was wrong.
Oh no!
Yeah, 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 yeah. But I'm gonna keep on scheming till I can make you my own.
That's all it took me, just one look.